Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. This is our telephone talk program. My name's David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. In this part of the show, first hour today, we'll be talking about the Urban League, and we have two guests with us in the studio, and we're pleased to have them both. Here with us is Hugh Price. He is president of the National Urban League. He has had that post since July of 1994, and he is in the area to help the folks here locally in the Urban League of Champaign County celebrate their 40th anniversary. He'll be speaking at their anniversary dinner tonight here in our area. And also joining us is Tracy Parsons. He's president of the Urban League of Champaign County. We're glad to have them here. And as we talk, of course, questions are welcome. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. At any point here, people are welcome to call. All we ask is people just try to be brief so we can keep things moving along and accommodate as many different folks as possible. But anybody is welcome to join the conversation. Thank you both very much, Mr. Price, Mr. Parsons, for being here.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Pleasure.
The Urban League just last fall, I believe, celebrated its 90th anniversary, and the organization is probably now as strong as ever, although when you took over in 1994, it was not in as good a shape as it is today. There was a big deficit. I think people were really concerned about the future of the organization. What, when you became the head on the national level, what did you do to turn things around?
We took a look at the strengths of the organization, the legacy of the organization, and the needs of the organization. There's several things that popped out that our board had identified when I was hired and that I focused on. Obviously, when you've got a lot of red ink flowing, you've got to stop that. So we had to do something very difficult, which was to trigger a downsize that resulted in 47 out of 110 staff people leaving. It was very wrenching, as we are a family, and folks didn't really understand why they had to be done, but we had to bring the books into balance. As a result of that, we stabilized the organization, reached financial equilibrium, and have now had 5 straight years of surpluses. Secondly, we had to reconstitute our National Urban League Board. We had terrific people who were deeply committed to our movement, but they had been on the board a long time, and we needed fresh energy. So we placed term limits and time limits on trustees of 6 years, and we said to everybody who'd been on more than 6 years that they had one more year to serve. And we had 20 trustees leave at one time, and we were able to bring in a lot of new leaders for the board. And we did a lot of work in supporting our affiliates and fortifying them. We've done provided a lot of technical assistance. And we set about trying to establish a strong identity for the league. We set a policy agenda for the league. We focused on heavily on children because that's the foundation for progress. And we concentrated on our mission statement. And we made it clear last year that the Urban League is no longer the second oldest this or the second oldest that. We are the oldest and largest community-based movement devoted to empowering African Americans to enter the economic and social mainstream. That's who we are in the 21st century.
There are other organizations that have a similar mission, at least to the extent that they're about empowering African Americans. You've touched on this a little bit, but I wonder if you could talk a little bit more about how you think the Urban League is different, or are there ways in which the Urban League is different from other organizations that might seem to be similar?
Well, there are many organizations that are kindred spirits. The NAACP was founded a year before the league. It is focused principally on breaking down the legal barriers to opportunity, and in the early years it concentrated on eliminating lynching. Our focus was quite different back then, and it remains different today. Our goals for our people are the same. But the league has always been there to help people who are coming into communities like Champaign, Urbana, or Detroit, or New York, who came to town and said, I need help figuring out where I ought to live, where I can get a good job, where I should send my children to school. So we have a base of direct service and social service, which has been part of the legacy of our movement throughout. Urban leagues are professionally staffed organizations in the community, which is a distinction from other organizations. In Tracy Parsons, we have a very dynamic leader here. We've got a strong Urban League that's here 24/7, not on a volunteer basis, but it is here day in and day out to provide services and leadership, advocacy, and policy work. So that's a major distinction between the league and other organizations. And we have a division of labor, sort of an unspoken division of labor between the organizations, where some are principally focused on advocacy or litigation. We're there focused on mobilization and service. Mm.
I guess maybe I should have mentioned in the beginning when I was introducing the guest that, Tracy, you've been in your job here with the Urban League of Champaign County about as long as Hugh Price has been head on the national level. It was the same year, right?
It was the same year, and we're roughly about a month apart. And actually, I attended the national conference in July of 94 in Indianapolis before it actually started here to kind of get a head start. And we've really tried to mirror what Hugh has brought to the table on the national level here locally. I think he's been very progressive in his thoughts about where we should be moving the population that we serve. And so we've tried to coincide with what he's talked about on a national level here in the program development areas that we have as for our organization.
Hmm. Well, why don't you talk a little bit about what the Urban League has been doing here in Champaign County?
Well, I think, you know, one of the things that I didn't talk a lot about when I first arrived was the state that this Urban League was in. And so it was an organization that also was riddled in debt. A good deal of complacency, I think, maybe had set in. So we've had to almost reinvent ourselves here as well. We're involved in program development and serving our constituencies in the area of employment and training, housing development. We've taken on the area of technology the last couple of years, very involved in the area of education. And so we're celebrating our 40th anniversary. Since I've been here in 94, we've doubled in size. Our annual budget is about $3.5 million, and it's about $1.4 when I arrived. I had 11 staff members, and I think right now I have about 31. And we had five or six programs. Now we have almost 25 different programs. So we've had a great deal of success the last few years in reinventing ourselves. We've moved into a new location that's much more visible and has on-site technology, on-site parking. It can be found now versus in a back alley where we were when I first arrived. So we've worked hard with National and trying to do some very similar things here in Champaign.
Let me make a point about the situations we both inherited. This is very daunting work. And, you know, terrific and visionary people preceded us. In my case, it was John Jacob, who was the head of the National Urban League before me. Tracy's predecessors, you know, built organizations on the shoulders of their predecessors. But it's grueling, and at some point you run out of gas, and you got to pass the baton. And so, you know, we sort of caught our predecessors at the tail end of distinguished careers, and, you know, the organizations, you know, all organizations need an injection of new energy, and so that's what that we've done, and any progress that we've made has been, as I say, built on the shoulders of those who've gone before us, and the process of regeneration should be built into the way any organization operates. Mm.
Where does the money come from to fund the activities of the Urban League?
The National Urban League draws funding from a variety of sources. We have fundraising events like our annual dinner. We get some net proceeds from our annual conference. We get a lot of support from corporations in this country, from foundations, from direct mail. We will mine any source that we can think of. And we've also worked to build our endowment. When I arrived, our endowment was around $8 million, counting cash and commitments and assuming that the stock market doesn't stay in the tank. Our endowment's up around $28 million now, which has been it's critically important to the viability of the organization over the long haul. Mm.
Any government money?
Yes, we have government contracts, not nearly as many as in the heyday of so-called categorical grant programs back in the 1970s. Basically, most government grants are flowing straight through to localities. They used to flow through us. So we have some government support, but it's not nearly as big a factor in our budget as it once was.
How about on the here and local?
And we're exactly the opposite. You know, we have a number of governmental contracts, whether they're federal and state grants as well as local governments. We're operating a number of programs for city government here in our community. We also are the number two funded agency through the United Way. We also, as our annual dinner is this evening, that is a fundraising event for us. And we embarked on a campaign called Achievement Matters, a campaign for African American achievement a couple of years ago. And that has been a major revenue source for us as we've worked to stabilize our economic state as well.
I should introduce again our guests for this first part of Focus 580. Tracy Parsons is president of the Urban League of Champaign County. They are celebrating their 40th anniversary. And to help them here in our studio and here in Champaign-Urbana is Hugh Price. He is president of the National Urban League. And questions are welcome. 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-WILL. Well, I know from having looked at your website that there are as far as the National Urban League is concerned, there are these three major areas that you're particularly interested in: education and economic self-sufficiency and racial inclusion. Maybe we can talk a little bit about each of those sorts of things and then what sort of programs you're involved in to try to get at each of those things, starting with education, particularly here we're talking about young people.
Right. The League launched the Campaign for African American Achievement about 4 years ago because we decided that we needed to do our level best to mobilize our community to embrace the message that achievement matters. We want to get our children on the achievement page, believing that it is critically important to do well in school. So, for example, here in Champaign-Urbana, the Urban League had staged events to celebrate youngsters who are doing the right thing. And I think the last one, you had about 5,000 young people. That's designed for the adult community to say to youngsters, we want you to embrace these values and to strive to do well in school. We've created a National Achiever Society for youngsters who are excelling in school and getting B averages or better. And they are inducted into our Achiever Society, which in effect is a national achievement gang with its own rituals and regalia and its own credo and its own colors. And there we say we really do value academic achievement. And interestingly enough, a lot of people say young boys aren't into achievement, but at our event out in Kansas City last year, about 40% of the youngsters who were inducted were boys, which is really exciting. We had 1,700 people out at the church that day in celebration of achievement. As we look ahead, we're going to focus increasingly on early literacy. The News Gazette reported yesterday that the National Assessment for Educational Progress, which is a snapshot of education across the country, found that in the year 2000, roughly 63% of African-American youngsters are reading below basic in the fourth grade. So we've got to get our children coming into school ready to learn and to read, and we've got to make sure that when they exit elementary school, they are on the achievement page and reading on grade or better. So we're going to be working with parents and community organizations and partnering with organizations like Scholastic Magazine in order to help parents know what they need to do and also to say to the schools that we need for you to focus on this issue. We're the second area of concentration, if you want me to continue, is in economic self-reliance. We are deeply involved in helping people land good jobs. The Urban League here has the NewSET program, which is designed to help folks understand what the career possibilities are in the field of transportation. One out of every eight jobs in the American economy is transportation related, and those are good jobs, and so we're helping people to learn about that. We're focusing on helping people buy their first homes, and so there's a home credit counseling program here at the Urban League of Champaign County, which is right on the mark in terms of what must be done. And the third major concentration is race relations, and we've been in the thick of the battles to preserve affirmative action and the principle of inclusion that is embedded in affirmative action. We have been in the forefront of fighting against racial profiling and trying to put an end to that awful practice and to deal with a lot of the discrimination that still exists in the criminal justice system. And I would just say one other thing about the media, by the way. I think that the job that the press has done, public radio and newspapers around the country, in staying focused on racial profiling has made a huge difference. Because a lot of people in the civil rights community and in community organizations were saying this was a problem, and officialdom didn't want to believe it. They were in denial. But the fact that the press stayed on the case, kept peeling away at the onion, has helped to demonstrate that there is indeed a problem that must be addressed. So those are the three areas of concentration at the national level, and they are reflected in the work that the Urban League here in Champaign County is doing.
We have a caller here we'll get to in just a moment, but I thought just because you mentioned in passing the National Assessment of Educational Progress, I do want to mention that tomorrow morning on the show, we're going to talk about this. We're going to talk about what that has to do with improving student achievement, what these NAEP test scores tell us. We'll have three guests for this program: Kevin Seymour from the Illinois State Regional Office of Education, Carmen Pfeiffer, who is also with the state of Illinois. She's Deputy Superintendent for Standards, Assessment, and Accountability. So these people are in the state educational bureaucracy. And also Brian Stecker, who's a researcher with RAND. They put out a report looking at all the scores from all the various states recently. And we thought it would be a good thing for us to talk about, particularly since the Bush administration has put a lot of emphasis on the idea of testing and accountability. And these days in education, it seems like that's one of the big words you hear about every time you turn around, accountability. So we're going to talk about that.
I would hope that when you have them on, you would not mm-hmm. only explore what the findings are, but also what some of the correlations are. There's some fascinating lessons in the report. They report on what the circumstances of youngsters are that who tend to do well in the reading scores. And you find out, for example, that parents are monitoring and restricting the amount of television that children who read well watch, that there are books in the home, that there's a lot of recreational reading that goes on, that parents read to their children, have the children read to them. In other words, reading is valued activity and it's protected activity in the home. That is something that we've got to focus on in our community. And I hope that you, in the interviews with them, draw out those lessons, because embedded in the data is some very important lessons for what parents can do to make a difference.
Very good. So that will be on this program tomorrow morning in the 11 o'clock hour. So you might want to tune in for that. Our guests again this morning are Hugh Price and Tracy Parsons. Hugh Price is president of the National Urban League. Tracy Parsons is president of the Urban League of Champaign County. And questions are welcome. We do have a caller here ready to go in Aurora. So let's talk with them on our line number 4. Hello?
Yes, I was going to ask, what do you feel is your greatest achievement working with the in the Urban League? What do you feel is your greatest achievement?
About a month after I took this job, there was an article in a magazine called Emerge. It's an African-American magazine, the title of which was, "Is the National Urban League Dead?" We're here and Emerge is no longer in publishing. That may be our grade, not to be blunt about it, but what we have done is we've taken a hard look at who we are and what our role and our mission is in the 21st century here in Champaign County and across the country. We've worked together to inject new energy, new focus, new determination, and we have defined ourselves for the 21st century in a way that I think ensures that we will continue to serve and to lead in our second century. So I think that is the greatest achievement and the greatest sense of satisfaction that I feel about what we've done on my watch.
I have a question to ask, and I hope I formulate it correctly. There is such a need for computer literate people, and I'll be honest, to bring people in from other countries, I feel that ought not to be necessary. It seems to me that we have enough people that could be trained for this work. What are you doing to achieve or help with that?
We're doing several things. At the affiliate level, many of our urban leagues, including here in Champaign-Urbana, have set up community technology centers where young people and parents have a chance to use modern technology and to become conversant and comfortable with it. Secondly, our whole stress on education and early literacy is critically important, because you can't navigate the instructions on a computer if you can't read. You can't master the engineering involved in high tech if you haven't taken algebra, and you can't take algebra if you can't do the word problems in algebra. At the national level, we've been very involved in the debates over the H-1B legislation, which would lift the number of visas that allow people from outside the country in to work in the technology field. And we have said, if you're going to lift the visas, there's got to be a concerted effort by the federal government to train native young people born in this country for this industry. Earlier this morning in a meeting with a cross-section of community leaders, I said, you know, one of the things with so many technology entities right here in Champaign-Urbana, one of the challenges you might put to them is to say, we want you to partner with community organizations like the Urban League and with the school system to create some new small high schools that are technology-focused and that, you know, identify some young people who enjoy math and science and bring those youngsters into a school that focuses explicitly on technology and get them ready to move right on into the world of technology. That is something that those firms can do that would make a tremendous contribution. So those are the kinds of initiatives that I believe have to be undertaken at a community level and also at the federal level.
Well, I'm very glad to hear that because I really feel strongly that our own people, what is the job rate for blacks in the country?
Well, it's around 7.5%. It's for better or for worse, we run about twice the national average, and there's been a little bit of an uptick because of the economic slowdown. But it was running about 7% before the slowdown. It's now about 7.5 or perhaps approaching 8%.
Well, good luck in your work.
Thank you so much for your call.
I wish you well.
Thank you
for the call. I think it's particularly noteworthy that I think in this community we do have folks, especially folks who are involved in the local community computing effort, PrairieNet, that have been working to try to bring people into the technological age, make computers available to them, have some basic training made available to them so that people who perhaps otherwise wouldn't be able to can have some access to that technology and be able to benefit by being able to get onto the internet and do things like look for information on employment or anything else that they're interested in.
We've been very involved with that project with PrairieNet. We were the community partner that has distributed well over 700 computers directly into the hands of the low-income population. I believe we've set up about 10 community sites throughout the community and housing authority complexes, churches, the Boys and Girls Club, as well as the Urban League. And so we continue to work on that. My concern always is that we stay a little bit behind the eight ball. We're still dealing with getting access and educating our community about the importance of it. Well, technology is changing and evolving daily. And so we have to do some things to catch our community up, but we are very involved in that issue.
We have to get more of our young people taking science and math and advanced science and math. One of the most influential books I've ever read is a book called Tribes, which analyzes how various ethnic groups have survived and prospered in the face of great adversity. It talks about the Brits who once ruled the world. It talks about East Indians, Palestinians, Jews, etc. One of the basic messages is that those groups that have survived and prospered have focused both on education but also on being on the leading edge of knowledge so that you are in the engine driving change rather than always trying to catch up with the caboose. And Tracy's point is absolutely on target. We've got to get more young people into these leading edge fields. We've got a lot, but we need a lot more youngsters who are in those fields.
We're at our midpoint already. Let me just real quick again introduce our guests. Last person you heard, Hugh Price. He's president of the National Urban League, and also here in studio with us, Tracy Parsons. He's president of the Urban League of Champaign County. Hugh Price is here to help the folks locally celebrate their 40th anniversary. He'll be the keynote speaker at the 40th anniversary dinner of the Urban League of Champaign County. That's tonight. And your questions are welcome. 333-9455 for Champaign-Urbana. Also, we have a toll-free line. Good anywhere that you can hear us. That is 800-222-9455. We have some other callers here. The next person in line is in Peoria, and that would be line one.
Hello? Yes, good morning.
Yes?
Here in Peoria, Caterpillar Tractor Company, they have 1,100 young people from India that are in the computer division here. Are you aware of that?
Let's just say I'm not surprised by that. There are a lot of interesting things going on as we have a global labor market. Those young people are here. There was an amazing article in the New York Times the other day. Do you know that when you call a credit company and speak to someone about an issue with your credit card account, you may be talking to someone who is actually in India who has a pseudonym, an American pseudonym, and who will give you the name of a town where they live, and it's all fake. They know what they're supposed to do. They know the help they're supposed to provide, but they've got American names, and they've got American locations, and they've got relatives who have American names, so they tell you. The point of all this is to say that we're really dealing with a global labor market and a global economy, and we've got to do our level best to make sure that our young people are prepared for the careers that are unfolding, and that's the whole point of our achievement campaign. There's been so much explosive growth in the economy that companies are trying to fill in as best they can. And of course, they try to fill in with the cheapest labor they can.
I know two boys that went over there, and they worked in the shop. And they evidently, their foreman must have thought that they had a little more in the moxie than the average. They sent them to Bradley, paid their tuition, and also paid their wages while they were learning computers.
Well, we've got to, you know, there are a lot of young people born overseas and who live in hard scrabble circumstances who find America very attractive in terms of the money they can earn, the lifestyle, and they may come here under this H-1B program for a while and send a lot of money back home and then return. I think that we'll see less of that if we can prepare more of our own young people for these industries, and that's the whole point of our achievement campaign, and that must be the whole point of the school system here and across the country.
Thank you.
All right, let's go back here locally to another caller. Line number two in Champaign. Hello.
Hello. Nice to talk to you, Mr. Price, and also Mr. What is it, Terry?
Tracy.
Tracy, I'm sorry, Tracy. I had a brain cramp, Tracy. It happens when you get older.
There's another way of thinking about that. Someone once said that they still have a photographic memory.
Uh-huh.
They just don't get same-day service anymore.
Okay, well, that's my problem. I'm African-American professional. Grew up in the Jim Crow South with all the ignominy associated with that existence. Came to the land of Lincoln expecting more and has been rudely awakened to the fact that north of the Mason-Dixon line, as we once thought in the South, it is no better. It's just a little bit more subtler. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
We are losing the race here as well as still where I came from in Arkansas. But I do have some questions of you and Mr. Hugh Price, who I do respect immensely, both of you. And I'm using this term, losing the race, because I'm reading a book now by a neoconservative African-American linguist from the University of California.
John McWhorter.
John McWhorter,
yep.
And boy, it's Self-Flagellation of Black People at its worst.
Yep.
But I try to listen to that perspective of the Clarence Thomases, Shelby Steeles, and now John McWhorter, who's younger than I, so I don't think he ever experienced what I experienced growing up and trying to get where I am now. But some points I want to make. One, I do believe that your focus on academic achievement and the achievement gap is very noteworthy. My question to you, and I just read the statistics on the fourth grade reading scores, how, granted, two-thirds of all Americans in the fourth grade not performing up to standards, but a higher percentage of African-Americans, significant higher percentage of African-Americans, especially African-American males, are not reading at the fourth grade level. And that is a basic skill that you must have to be integrated into the global economy of the 21st century. What are you doing? And a fact I never heard anyone mention seriously, I do, the parents are involved, should be involved, the community should be involved. Well, what about getting the public school teachers to get involved in a way that they really can competently, without fear or apprehension, deal with African-American students, especially African-American male students?
Well, I think you put your finger on a very tough point. As a matter of fact, you may have given my speech tonight. first, I would say there has been a lot of progress, and we really ought to celebrate the progress that's been made by our community in the previous century and in the aftermath of the Brown decision. I mean, there's no question in my mind that African-Americans are much better off than we were in the heyday of segregation. But it's also no question in my mind we're not as far along as I think we figured we would be 50 years after the Brown versus Board of Education decision. And part of the key is this education challenge that we face that you really pinpoint. I think there are two kinds of things that have to be done. One is our community has got to become obsessed once again with the importance of academic achievement. Back in the aftermath of the Emancipation Proclamation, folks may not have been educated. They may have been slaves, but there wasn't any doubt in our community about the importance of achievement and education, and we raised our children with that in mind. Somehow we lost that obsession as a people. Obviously, there are exceptions, but we sort of got derailed over the last 20 or 30 years, and we've got to get back on track with that, and that is the whole point of our academic achievement campaign. We've reached out to fraternities and sororities and barbers and beauticians to say, and ministers to say, we've all got to pull on the oars on this and make sure that we know what's going on with our kids, that we're doing what we can, and that we're holding the schools accountable. Now, you raise a related, let me just, if
okay,
I could,
sorry.
You raise the related point of what's the obligation of the schools.
Yes.
I think the schools are stuck in the mud along with the children. When you look at the studies, as many as half of the teachers who are teaching our children are not properly prepared. They don't know the subject matter, and a surprising number of them don't even believe that our children can achieve at high levels.
Absolutely.
I'm on the board of directors of Metropolitan Life Insurance Company. We did a big survey last year and found that two-thirds of the teachers that we surveyed did not believe that the children they taught were likely to go to college, but two-thirds of the children we surveyed expected to go to college. So you got a real serious disconnect there. And so we've got to get at that. And I think we've got to give – we've got to – increase compensation for teachers so that we attract stronger and more motivated people into the field. I think we've got to create schools that are probably smaller, that have a lot more flexibility than they have now. We've got to invest in real professional development for the teachers. We've got to make sure the schools have the books and the technology. And frankly, I think we've got to hold the schools strictly accountable. I, for one, believe that every public school should be put on a performance contract, and they should be told that if you get 60 to 70% of the children on grade or better in the basic subjects, then you can continue to function. But if you fall below that threshold, then we have to talk. And, you know, we expect you to improve, but if you chronically fail to improve, then we're gonna bring a new team in, or we may have to shut this school down and let the children go elsewhere. We've got to enter a no-nonsense era of academic performance and academic accountability, principally for the adults.
Thank you, Mr. Price, and thank you, Mr. Parsons.
All right, thank you for the call.
I might just add that locally, both school districts in Champaign and Urbana are working under Office of Civil Rights agreements and working towards student achievement, specifically for African-American students. Part of that, obviously, is working directly with teachers. We know that in one of the elementary buildings in Champaign School District, the U of I conducted a survey of the teachers, and only a third of them even believed that the students had the capacity to be successful. And so that school we know is having a great deal of training being done for the teachers, but that also, I think, is a very clear indication that there's a great deal of work that needs to be done around teacher expectation and teacher performance as well.
One of the core keys is to mobilize parents to make sure that they understand what's at stake and to try to get parents to the point of saying, we're not going to stand for this kind of education any longer. That's the way it works in the suburbs where the schools function well. The parents are on those schools, and they do not stand for lousy achievement and lousy schools, and we've got to reach the same point with our urban schools.
One of the things I wanted to ask you about was how it is we all should be thinking about racism here now in 2001. And I ask the question because it seems to be the case that many European Americans seem to believe that there isn't any, or at least that it's not a big deal now, that we had civil rights, we went through that, and that equality is the conditions of the day. And as the caller suggested, there perhaps are some African American intellectuals, political leaders, people like that who would make that same case. But I'm sure that many other African Americans would say that's bunk. Yes, there still is racism. How do we think about that now?
Well, it's still here. I think it is subsiding a bit, but there it's still here. This is a complex country. When you think about the quality of public education and you look at the differences between the caliber of teachers that states allow to teach in urban districts as opposed to suburban districts, at root you've got a society which says we're going to tolerate one quality of education for children of color and poor children and another for well-to-do children. When you look at the quality of the facilities, how modern a lot of the suburban facilities are, how well equipped they are as opposed to the urban facilities, you see it. So implicit in that is racism and indifference. Jim Crow is running amok in the criminal justice system. When you look at the discretion that police officers exercise when they stop a white child who's got a little bit of cocaine or marijuana as opposed to an African-American child, police officers tell me that the routine is to take a middle-class white child back home to the parents. The black child goes down to jail in the lockup. It continues all the way through. The studies show patterns of arrest, patterns of sentencing, patterns of incarceration, and length of prison time. The majority of substance abusers in our society are white. The overwhelming majority of people in jail for substance abuse are Latino or African American. So it's very, very clear. Finally, it's amusing. I had quite a wonderful experience. Friday night, I went to the annual dinner of the Horatio Alger Association, which is a big organization that holds a dinner in Washington to celebrate and recognize leaders, and particularly corporate leaders, who have risen above hard scrabble lives and hardship to become major corporate figures. Virtually all of those honored were people who had, you know, whose parents had been alcoholic or separated, and they had, you know, they had been poor, et cetera, et cetera. There's one African American who was honored. It was Franklin Raines, who had some tough situations in his own life. Franklin Raines, brilliant African American, is the CEO of Fannie Mae. The white CEOs who were honored that night had gone to, I mean, hard-driving, smart, bright people had gone to state universities and community colleges, et cetera, almost without exception. Franklin Raines, the only African American who was honored, was a graduate of Harvard Law School, Harvard Undergraduate School, and was a Rhodes Scholar. It's questionable whether this country is yet ready for people who have modest academic backgrounds and who are of color to become CEOs in this country. To get to the top, Ken Chenault was a classmate of, who heads American Express, was a classmate of Frank Raines's at Harvard Law School. So to get to the top of corporate America, you still got to be a Jackie Robinson, a Willie Mays, or Hank Aaron, or a Hall of Famer, whereas people from more modest circumstances who are white get to rise to the top. We'll equalize all of that over time, but there's no question that you still see, for all the progress that's been made, and it's fantastic to see a Raines and a Chenault and others at the top, we still have a long way to go. And we chip away. America, on the question of race, America is a work in progress, and we work at making progress. I am thankful that I am was born in this country, that I am an American, and I don't care where I've ever traveled anywhere in the world, and I've been very fortunate to travel. I am always thankful when I touch back down, and I thank my lucky stars that I was born here, because I think conditions for African Americans are better here than any place in the world. But that doesn't absolve us of responsibility to keep working at making this country better. The other point I'd make is with the profound population changes underway in this society, with African Americans and Latinos now comprising about a quarter or more of the population, and by the year 2050, close to half of the population, the country has to continue to work on this, because we will fail as a society if we don't figure out how to bring everybody into the fold at every level of American society.
And I think I would just add locally here, I tend to focus on racism as it relates to the economic state of our community. We have very few African-American-owned businesses. He was touched on the educational issues that we're fighting. You know, we've recently had a climate survey done to assess the state of our school districts in Champaign, and we're still fighting to prove legitimate the instrument. And so we have a great deal of work to do here locally. One of the issues is that it's uncomfortable for people to talk about. And so we tend to back away from the issue, and we use code words, and we use surface things to mask the issue of race and not deal with it.
We have about 10 minutes left, actually a little less, and I should introduce again our guests. Tracy Parsons is president of the Urban League of Champaign County, Hugh Price, president of the National Urban League. And we have a caller here ready to go, bring into the conversation, 333-9455 if you're here in Champaign-Urbana, where we are. Do also have a toll-free line if it would be a long-distance call for you and you'd like to join us. That's 800-222-9455. The caller here is in Urbana, and it's line one. Hello.
Yeah, hi. Blacks have pursued principles that have benefited Latinos like me quite a lot, for which I'm thankful. And but I'm afraid I'm calling in with a bit of a complaint here, because that last call mentioned the difficulty of dealing with unruly black kids, especially males, but also females. And I've got to tell you a little story. Recently, I substitute taught at a local high school. The class was half black, half white. The blacks all sat by themselves. The whites all sat by themselves. Blacks were came in kind of en masse after the bell, and were unruly and loud, and did not want to take any kind of instruction. And this was hardly a and this is hardly an exception. You know, I've been to some of the high schools in the area, and very often, if someone's coming in late to class, it's one of the black students. Unfortunately, I don't have to be a racist to observe this. I just have to be sentient. You know, and there's a real deep problem in dealing with this. I've come to the conclusion that the best way to express it is to just say that a lot of these kids are just not living up to their responsibility in the classroom. It's you know, I hated being in school myself. I can commiserate with them sitting 8 hours, almost 8 hours in a day, listening to often very boring stuff. You know, it's difficult to do, but you know, that does not justify them just. They're just throwing away their education the way they do, and having no ability, no way really to sanction them. You can't really throw them out of school, you know, because that would be even worse for the community. And what I see is that parents are not coming, need to see this for themselves. They really need to see this for themselves. And I wish maybe the Urban League or whoever actually observe some of this stuff. Perhaps it necessarily would have to be clandestinely, you know, but maybe through a videotape or something. But something's got to be done. Too many class hours are being thrown away because we cannot deal with unruly kids. And unfortunately, a large number of them are in the black community. I just wish you'd address that. Yeah, the putting the onus on the teachers, believe me, is a real error. Their hands are tied.
Let's we had coming down to the point where, you know, just have a couple minutes. Let's get a response from.
Well, yes. I mean, I think you raised a number of tough questions. I would only say that there are lots of schools around the country serving the same kinds of young people that are performing quite well. Schools that have gotten a handle on that. I would not absolve parents of their responsibility. There are community organizations or churches, and we've got to do a much better job. But there are ways of structuring schools where young people really feel excited about being there, feel that they belong there, and that the educators have confidence in them. And I think we've got to create more of those kinds of schools. The other point I'd make is that we have a lot of issues with young people in our society. By and large, it's not black kids who are bringing guns into schools and killing their classmates. So that's happening in the white community. I don't want to jump racial on anybody, but across this country, we have a lot of issues with parenting of children. And the fact that we don't do a good job as a society of parenting and loving and supporting and guiding our children is manifesting itself in different ways in different parts of our communities. But by and large, our children are not bringing guns into school and killing their classmates and shooting their teachers. So I just think all of us have to check ourselves out on these issues, and we've got to rededicate ourselves to providing children with the support and love and guidance that they need in order to grow and to be successful.
Just one thing I wanted to ask you about quickly. One of the things that came out of the most recent census, and apparently it was a surprise to some people, was just how quickly the numbers of Hispanics in the United States had grown, faster than had been predicted. And now, at least the last thing I read, I think, said that now there are more Hispanic Americans than there are African Americans.
Well, there have been several years ago, the birth rate among Hispanics in this country surpassed the African American birth rate. We have known that this trend was underway, and it was only a question of what year they would pass our population, because the projections, according to the census, were that by the year 2050, the Latino population would be about 25% of the American population and about twice our size. And we knew they would overtake us. It was just a question of whether it was going to be 2001, 2002, November or March of which year.
Does that have some particular significance, you think, to the African-Americans of—
Well, I mean, I think it has psychological significance. When you move from number two to number three in the political food chain, you've got to adjust to that reality. I think it has strategic significance. For me, it means that we've got to focus ever more on the very issues that the Urban League focuses on, which is getting our folks into the economic and social mainstream, promoting high levels of academic achievement, economic self-reliance, building wealth so that we aren't dependent on politicians who may not pay as much attention to us in the future. And lastly, using our political leverage. At 13% of the population, we are still much larger than the margin of victory in virtually any political election. So we've got to be smarter than ever about using our considerable political leverage. But the basic message is that we have to focus on the fundamentals going forward and be less reliant on the public sector and government for solving a lot of our economic needs.
We are going to have to stop there with our thanks to our guests, Hugh Price, president of the National Urban League, and Tracy Parsons, president of the Urban League of Champaign County. Mr. Price is here to help the folks locally celebrate their 40th anniversary. He'll be the keynote speaker at 40th anniversary dinner of the Urban League of Champaign County tonight. Both of you, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Enjoyed it.